Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Mem Dalid in Avodah Zarah. We'll begin today's daf at the end of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. We have just a little bit left to do from yesterday's daf. Yesterday's daf was Rabbi Gamliel and his moons. Today and yesterday are all about Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel and his moons. People came into his study, into his office, in order to give a testimony to the sighting of the new month. And he had moons, he had pictures of moons, and yesterday we spent the entire day discussing how could he have pictures of moons. You're not allowed to have pictures of moons. So, and the Gemara had two issues that it dealt with. Number one, the asiya, the actual making of the pictures. Number two, the issue of chashad, of having to be above suspicion. And the Gemara spent significant amounts of time addressing those two issues. Finally, the Mishnah, where all this came from, talked about finding Kalim. And the Mishnah goes back to Mem Beis 42b, and the Mishnah says that if you find Kalim and it has a picture of a sun or a moon or a dragon, so you have to destroy, you have to send it to the Yam HaMelech. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says it depends where on the Kli. If it's Mechubadim, so then it would be Aser, but if it's Mevuzim, it would be Mutar. In other words, the assumption is that if it was drawn on a precious type of Kli, so then that's going to be an issue. But if it's drawn on not such a precious type of Kli, so that would be fine. So the Mishnah does not articulate what that means, precious versus not precious, something which is Mechubad. So the Gemara is going to now pick up on that. We are about seven lines from the bottom of the Amud on Mem Gimel and Beis, and we're at the two dots. From Shimon Gamliel, Omer, V'chule, Ezo Hein Mechubad, V'Ezo Hein Mevuzin. So Amar Rav, so the Gemara is going to give two pshatim. The first pshat the Gemara is going to give is in the name of Rav, Mechubadim Lamala Min Amayim, Mevuzim Lamata Min Amayim. So the first pshat goes like this, where we're talking about a bowl, some sort of bowl or cup used for liquid, for drink. If the engravement of your sun, moon, dragon is going to be above the waterline, so that's mechubad, that's something which is honorific. If it's something which is below the waterline, so then that's not so, that doesn't mean much. It's just there for decoration. Shmuel Amar Elav Elam Mevuzin. Shmuel says, nah, he doesn't buy it. They're both Mevuzeh, they're both disgraceful. Ela Elu Hein Mechubadim Sha'al Hashir and Val Nezamim V'Ala Tabaos. Shmuel says, no. In fact, if it's on a bowl or a cup or something like that, that for sure is not, that's not mechubad. It has to be on silk, on a ring, on a nose ring, something like that. That's mechubad. Tanya Kavasi Shmuel. In fact, the Braisa supports what Shmuel is saying. Mechubadim shal hashirim v'al nizamim v'al tabaos mevuzim shal hayoros v'al akumka simin v'al machmeh hamayim v'shal asadim v'al mitpachos. If it's on any one of your bowls in the house, that's nothing. That's nothing to be significant about. If it's on clothing or on fancy clothing, or if it's on a on jewelry, that's something significant. All right. We start today's daf with the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud, and it really is a takeoff of the previous Mishnah. You find a bowl with a old jewelry with a sun or a moon or a dragon drawn on it. So the Mishnah says you have to assume it was used for Avodah Zarah, okay? And you have to discard it. Also fine. How did the Mishnah tell us how to discard it? So the previous Mishnah said, Yolichem liyam ha-melech. You have to send it to the Dead Sea. Dead Sea, of course, it's called dead because nothing survives the Dead Sea. You go in there with a scraper or a cut. You'll feel it. And fine. So obviously, you throw something into the Dead Sea, it deteriorates in the salt, right? Clearly. The Mishnah says, what else can you do with it in terms of destroying it? So Rabbi Yossi Omer, so this is just really a continuation of the previous Mishnah, Shochek Vizore L'Ruach, Omatil Liyam. Grind it up, throw it into the wind, or cast it into the ocean, meaning after you ground it up. So he gives a piece of advice. He says, grind it up, and that would be fine. Amar lo, they said to Rav Yossi, you can't do that. Af hunase zevel. What do you mean? You grind it up, and it now becomes fertilizer. We spoke about this a couple days ago, that when you have metal and you grind up the metal, so it's a mineral, and apparently it was good. It made for good fertilizer. And you can't do this. The Pasuk says very clearly that you can't gain any benefit from it whatsoever. So even though after you ground it up, it obviously is no longer a avodah zarah, clearly, but still, the fact that you are going to get benefit from its remnants is a violation of Isurei Hana. And you can't do that. So the Gemara, the Chachamim say in response to Rav Yossi, you're simply not allowed to do that. Okay. And now, daf today is going to be broken up into two sections. First section of today's daf is going to be a great discussion about grinding something up and getting benefit from it. That's going to be the first, and that'll cover to the very bottom of Memdal Mem Aleph. And then the second half of today's daf is going to be the famous Rabbi Gamliel and the bathhouse. Okay. It's all, right, Rabbi Gamliel, a lot of Rabbi Gamliel today. Tanya, we are on the bottom of the Amud. Starting with the Gemara, Amar Lam Rav Yosef Alok Var Namar Veschataschem Asher Asisam Es Egel Akachvi Vestrof Oso Beish VeAkos Oso Tachon Heitev Ad Asher Dak LaAfar VeAshliches Afroal Anachal Hayori Menahar. So the Gemara says, wait a second. You mean to tell me that you have a Avodah Zarah, you can't grind it up, you can't pulverize it and grind it up? Moshe did it. Moshe did it with the first and the most famous piece of Avodah Zarah out there, and that's the Egel Azov. The golden calf. Now, despite the fact that the Kuzari, the Rabbi Yehuda Levi, says that it wasn't really a Avodah Zarah, it was just a means and ways of them getting closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they need another medium, that's all nice. But on its face value, it's a Avodah Zarah. The eagle is a piece of a Avodah Zarah. And what he did is, he ground it up. He ground it up and he spread it out over the river that came down from the mountain. And so Rabbi Yossi says to the Chachamim, how could you tell me that grinding it up is not acceptable? Moshe did it with the Egel Hazav. Obviously, it's okay. All right? It's not a proof, not an argument in Svar, not an argument in Lamdus. It just happens to be that I have historical precedent that's acceptable. Amrulo, they said to him, Misham Raya Harei Omer, Vayazir al Pnei Amayim, Vayishak es Bnei Yisrael. No, because they said to him, read on in the story. Because what he then did is that after now the ground up ashes of the Egel Hazav was running through the river, he then picked up some of the water of the river and he had them drink it. Lonis kavin ela labod kan kisotos. It was like sota. Right? Rashi and Chumash points out, and it's based on another Gemara, I don't remember where this Gemara is, that really there were three groups of people. Right? A group of people who for sure worshipped with witnesses, another group of people who maybe did, maybe didn't, and a third group who didn't, who did not. And Rashi says for that middle group, the people who we were unsure about, so much like a sota where we don't know exactly what happened in the room when he secluded himself with another woman, when she secluded himself, I should say, with another man, so they drink the Mayasota similarly over here. So he had this middle group of Bnei Yisrael drink from the May, I guess we'll call it Mayasota, it's not Mayasota, but in other words, they'll drink from the water. So the Chachamim say back to Rav Yossi, not a good proof. The fact that he ground it up, that was part of the Sota process. So you can't really use this as a proof. This is not going to be indicative of, in general, it's okay to grind it up. No, in general, it's not okay to grind it up. Here, Moshe did it for the specific purpose of making sota water. Okay. Amalem Rav Yossi. So again, now we're going to go back to Tanakh, and we're going to see whether or not grinding up an Avodah Zarah is an acceptable practice. So Amalem Rav Yossi, Alok Far Namar, Vegam Acha, Heisira Migvira, Asher asasa mafelatsta vayidok vayisrok benachal kidron. So one of the things that was done by King Asa is that he got rid of all the Avodah Zarah, including the Avodah Zarah of his grandmother, right? His grandmother Ma'acha, who made an Avodah Zarah and did terrible things with her Avodah Zarah, and unfortunately we get to read about what she did with her Avodah Zarah in just a moment. But before that, what did he do with the Avodah Zarah? He ground it up, right? It's the pasuk says, "Vayidok vayisrof benachal kidron." He ground it up and he then took the pulverized ashes of the Avodah Zarah and he sprinkled it into the Nachal Kidron. Again, Rav Yossi is just using precedent from Tanakh to show it's okay. It's okay to grind up Avodah Zarah. Amru lo, so once again, they say to him, Misham Rayam, that's not a good proof. Nachal Kidron einu megadol tzmachim. Nachal Kidron is not a river or a stream that produces any type of growth. It doesn't. No growth comes out of Nachal Kidron. It's essentially the same as throwing it into the Dead Sea. Right? No sprouting will come about of that. It's not, the issue is that when you take the powder and you put it over the land, it fertilizes the land. So the Chachamim say the fact that he threw it into Nachal Kidron, that's an indication that he wasn't going to use it for fertilizer.
But is it a requirement that you have to actually be there? You have to get Hana from the land, or if you're not going to be there, then it's not an issue.
Right.
And the issue is Hana, it's not just getting something fertile.
Correct. So I guess the concern would be, the Gemara does not articulate this point, but I guess the concern would be, is that once you throw it onto the land and it does fertilize it, so you or somebody else may come along and get benefit from it. Okay. So we have a Mishnah in Yuma. The Mishnah in Yuma describes how all the blood that was in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a canal that the blood spilled into and ran out of the Beis HaMikdash, right? There was a tremendous amount of blood from every carbon that was shechted on Pesach, right? Thousands and thousands of karbanos that were shechted, and all the blood was channeled into a canal and ran out of the Beis HaMikdash. And where did that canal go to? It led out to Nachal Kidron, presumably the same Nachal Kidron that's described in the story in Tanakh. And the Mishnah over there describes that what then would they do with that blood after it went out to Nachal Kidron? So the temple treasurers, the Gizbar, would take it and sell it as fertilizer. Now again, we talk about strange things used as fertilizers. We're talking about ground up metal, and we're talking about blood. But again, blood has nutrients in it, and I'm not a farmer, so I can't attest to whether or not blood is a good fertilizer or not. But the Mishnah in Yuma describes it as being an excellent fertilizer, and they would sell it. And the Mishnah ends off by saying, and there's a din me'ila. Right, that last part of the Mishnah over there, that's not classic me'ila, meaning if you take it, you're not misappropriating. That was blood that already the avoda was done with. So it just simply means that no farmer can go and help himself to the blood. That blood is still temple property, and so therefore you have to buy it off the temple. You can't just simply take the blood. That's right. That's what the Mishnah means when it says ein, right umoalan behen. There's a din of me'ila. Okay, but anyway. Where, I don't know.
Is it close to the Beis
HaMikdash? Apparently, it flows out of the Beis HaMikdash. It
should be very close.
Yeah, it should be.
It's the valley in the back. It's the stone.
What, the one right next to Gehinom? That area?
Lohar is 18?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
But you're allowed to sell Beit HaKabayis in general?
Yeah, that's the whole point. The whole point of Beit
HaKabayis. There's no tour or anything like that.
That's the whole point, is that they sell in order to raise money for the Beis HaMikdash.
Like the car.
Yeah. Use cars. So there. It's used blood. So
so why do you say it's not regular me'ilas?
Because it's not me'ilas by... I see what you're saying.
I said, it's not that Kabayas. Isn't this kosher and Zveach?
Right, but it's not though, because... It's right. It's
part of it was,
but not the part that ran out into the valley. I mean, Rashi says, "Love carbon meila kama dein meila bedam kachim kedamina beperikot tziolo." Ella also lehanos mehen ella bedamim. You need to pay for it. That's all the Mishnah means by einbo meila. So
there's no
meal. There is meila by Beit HaKabayis. This is like even like less than that. This is like refuse of it. Okay, so it's not, let me try to articulate this a little bit better. It's not something that somebody was makdish, meaning this is just leftover from a carbon that was not used as part of the avoda. So it's right, it's not your classic, it's certainly not kachim. It's not an object that someone says, I am dedicating this to the Beis HaMikdash. It's just a byproduct. It was part of it, but now it's the part that's right. So ulazava umolam behem. So the Gemara answers very simply: mekamos komos yeshbo yesh makom megadol tzmachem yesh makom shem megadol tzmachem. The Gemara answers very simply: look, Nachal Kidron is a long river. We'll just simply segregate it. Some of it is used for fertilizer. Some of it is not used for fertilizer. And the fact that in some places Asa did sprinkle the ashes of the Avodah Zarah used by his grandmother, he sprinkled it in an area that would produce no fertilization whatsoever. Okay. And then the Gemara says, my mafilatsisa, it is a strange use of word in the Tanakh. I'm Rav Yehuda, to have a mefila leitsunasa. So the Gemara now is going to take the word and break it up into two words, mafli leitsunusa. Mafli means something which is wondrous, something which is amazing. Plaot. And leitsunusa comes from the word leitsanus, right? Mockery. So, Kidni Rav Yosef explains, and Rav Yosef is our expert on Tanakh. Remember, Rav Yosef pretty much wrote the Targum after Torah, which Targum was written by Unklus. Rav Yosef wrote the Targum on Nevim and on Ksuvim. Kimin Zachrus Asasalah. So, she made not just the statue, but the statue apparently in a human form, and it was a male, and it had Zachrus Vahitza Niv Elas Lo Bechol Yom, and she used it for her own personal pleasure every day. So that is what Asa's grandmother did with the Avodah Zarah, and further reason, if there needed to be one, further reason why Asa then went ahead and destroyed the Avodah Zarah.
He was blind.
Either he did it before he was blind or after. Or after. I mean, he had some people write for him. Amlam Rav Yosef, Alokvar Namar. Okay, again, we go on. And this is just, again, another episode in Tanakh where Rav Yosef marshals and says, look, you see, they ground it up. What's the big deal? The pasuk says, V'kites nachash nechoshes asher asa Moshe. The copper snake that was made by Moshe. And it was because of an episode that happened in Chumash where everybody was dying and the instructions were, Moshe, make a copper snake, put it on his staff, the symbol that's used by the doctors nowadays, and show everybody the copper snake. And then later on, historically, they destroyed it because people started worshiping it, understandably. In other words, they thought that there was some actual power in the copper snake itself. And once again, Rav Yosef says, look what they did. They ground it up. Right? Clearly I'm right. So the Gemara's deflection over here goes like this. This snake was made by Moshe, not just by Moshe, but with Moshe's money. In other words, he used his own personal money to make the copper snake. This copper snake did not come from public funds. And so what? The Gemara goes on to explain. And we find at times that even though there's instructions from Hashem, the money comes from personal funds. The par on Yom HaKippurim offered by the Kohen, that comes from his own personal funds, even though the instructions were, you have to make it. Here also, copper snake, even though it was for public need, nevertheless it came from personal funds. And so what? The Gemara goes on to explain. Ein Adam Oser Davashenu Shalo. That means that once it was used from personal funds, nobody else can come along and say, I'm now worshipping it. You could say that, but it's not going to change the status. Nobody can come over to any of my private property and say, that's my God. He could say that, but it's not going to do anything. It's not going to change the status of my object. Ein Adam Oser Davashenu Shalo. A person cannot change the status of something that belongs to somebody else. So, once the copper snake is Moshe, so that means, and it's funny because now we moved ahead historically for hundreds of years, right? We're in the First Temple period now. Well, it's got to be 1,000 years after Moshe, but still, it's private property nevertheless. And the truth of the matter is that even though they were worshipping it, they didn't change its status. They didn't even need to grind it up. But he saw, though, that people were bowing down to it. So therefore, what he did is he ground it up. Just as a model lesson, don't do that. Don't worship this. Amalahem, again. Now Rav Yossi is going to go back. And they left their idols, and David Yaseim. Now, without the Gemara, I would have just simply said Vayaseim comes from the word Binsoa, to lift, to raise, to just simply walk away with it. The Gemara right now is going to be of the presumption that Vayasa'e mentioned here in this pasuk means that he ground it up. Okay? Umay Mashma, the Gemara says, how did you get there? Umay Mashma, the Havayasa'e, David, Lishna Dizruyehu. How do we know that he means he scattered it? Kidim Targum Rav Yosef. Again, we go back to Rav Yosef. Tizareim Veruach Tisa'im. Pasuk in Yeshayahu. And then you look at Targum over there, which is Targum Rav Yosef. Umitargaminan. Tizrinon Veruach Tiltale'un. You spread it out, the wind will send it. So you see that the word Tisa'im over here in this context in Yeshayahu means wind's going to send it. Okay, so it's possible, certainly viable, that if you go back to Shmuel Beis, then you go back to that pasuk over there describing a David grinding up this avodah zara, it in fact could mean the word vayisayim could mean grind up. So the Gemara says the Chacham's response to Rav Yosi is they didn't just grind it up, they burnt it. And burning it apparently gives it a totally different status. Okay, so they burned it up, and then vayisayim, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that they scattered it in the wind. It means they just simply picked it up. That's all. Mikamakom kasha kraya adadi kedravhuna deravhuna ramiksiv vayomer David vayisrafu beish uksiv vayisaim lo kasha kan kono shabat itai hagiti kan laachar shabat itai hagiti. So the Gemara says, look, the psukim seem to be somewhat confusing. One pasuk says they burned it up. Another pasuk says they picked it up. Well, which one is it? They burned it. They picked it up. What? Was the procedure that was done with the Avodah Zarah that they got from the Plishtim. So the Gemara says, it's not a stira. Before Itai Hagiti came, and he was a Philistine refugee, and before he came, they were planning on burning it, because it's Avodah Zarah, and you have to destroy, and you have to obliterate Avodah Zarah. So they were planning on burning it. Once Itai Hagiti came, so they didn't have to burn it anymore. Why not? Because he was going to be mevatalit, because he was going to nullify it. Remember, we've discussed this already a number of times. Jews cannot nullify avodah zarah. Goyim can nullify avodah zarah. Not only can they nullify it, they can nullify it even if it does not belong to them. And again, the Gemara now is going to set another precedent that Itai Hagiti was there to nullify avodah zarah. Veikach esateres malkam me'al rosho u'mishkol hakikar zahav. They took the crown of the king from his head, and its weight was kikar zahav. It was the weight of a kikar.
64 pounds.
Right. Umishar, we'll get to the weight in just a moment. Umishar, the Gemara says now, presumably this crown is also part of the Avodah Zarah. How could you just simply take the crown and use it for yourself? You can't get benefit from this Avodah Zarah. Amar Rav Nachman, Itai Hagiti, Ba Uvitala. So along comes the Philistine refugee, and they made use of the Philistine refugee, and they said to him, you see, all this Avodah Zarah, I want you to be Mevatalit. He was Mevatalit. He disavowed. And now all the Avodah Zarah no longer was Avodah Zarah. Okay, fine. And that's what happened with the crown, and that's what happened with this Avodah Zarah that the Philistines had. Good. Just a couple more words about the crown, and then we move on to the next part of today's daf. Mishkol HaKikar Zahav Echi Matzim HaNachla. It was Kikar Zahav. Kikar Zahav is heavy. They say somewhere around 60 pounds. A crown that is 60 pounds. You put it on your head. How do you do that? So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Ru'u Yalanuch HaRosho David. So the first answer is, he didn't wear it. In other words, it could go on his head. It theoretically would fit on his head, but he didn't actually wear it. Answer number one. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Evan, Shoeves Haisabah, Dahavadarala. So it was used with, it was propped up with magnetics. Right? We've seen magnetics used in the Gemara a couple of times already, where things were propped up with magnetics. I don't exactly know how it was done, but and so it was very heavy. It was a heavy crown, but through the use of magnetics, they were able to hold it up, so he didn't have to actually burden the weight of the 60-pound crown. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Evan Yikar Haisaba, Sheshavek Yikar Zahav. A third possible answer is that that's not the weight. That was its value. It was valued as the Kikar Zahav. Apparently there was a very precious stone, and its value was the Kikar Zahav. Okay? Three pshatim in terms of how David could possibly be wearing a crown that large. Zos I saw li ki pikudecha natsarti. This I got, says David in the Pasuk in Tehillim. Perkuf Yutes, largest perk in Tehillim, 176 psukim. Zosai Sali, I got this, ki pikudecha nitzarti, because I was shomer, I guarded your mitzvos. What's the pshat in the pasuk in Tehillim? My ka'amar hachi ka'amar b'schar she pikudecha nitzarti, zosai Sali. Because I kept your mitzvos, so this was coming to me. Le'edus as testimony, my edusa, meaning he's now, in the context of the Gemara, obviously he's talking about this crown that he got from the Philistines. So what's going on? I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Shaya Menicha b'makum tefillin, v'hol maso. What he did is he took the crown, basically where the tefillin was, where he wore the tefillin, he rested the crown in that configuration, and it fit on his head. Now, I'm not sure. It sounds like from the Gemara that because he was wearing tefillin, so the crown fit his head. It sounds like from the Gemara, the tefillin shaped his head. I'm not sure if that's the pshat. Tefillin, really, I don't think the wearing of tefillin reformats your head. I don't think so.
The crown was really on the brow and the tefillin were on the top.
We'll get to how he wore both in just a moment. But it sounds like that. I don't think that's the pshat. But it has something to do with the fact that he was wearing tefillin, has something to do with the fact that the crown fit. And the Gemara says, wait a second, you can't wear the crown because you need to be wearing tefillin. And at this point the Gemara is assuming that, oh, right where the tefillin was, that's where he put the crown on. Yeah, but he's got to be wearing his tefillin. Now, back in the good old days, they wore tefillin all the time, all day. We don't wear tefillin all day because it's hard to be gufnaki, it's hard to have a clean body the whole day. So we limit the amount of time that we wore tefillin. But you could trace it back to the Rishonim. But certainly, right, in earlier days, they used to wear the tefillin all the time. So the Gemara says, how could you be wearing the crown and the tefillin? I'm Rabbi Shmuel, Bar Rav Yitzchak, Makom Yesh, Berosh, Sharai Lanich, Lo Boshtei Tefillin. Truth be told, there's room on one's head for the placement of two pair of tefillin. Gemara says this a couple of times. And so what he did is, he was wearing one pair of tefillin. One pair of tefillin that he wore went on one of the parts of the front of his head, and then the crown went on the other part of the head. Fine. Vayotziu vayotziu es ben hamelch vayinu alav es hanezer the es ha'edus. Okay. After being in hiding for 6 years, right, Yoash was hidden from his crazy. What was his crazy mother? Crazy grand. Now, Atalia, she wanted to kill all of the Malucha. And he was hidden for 6 years. Vayinu alav es hanezer, they put the crown on him, ve'es ha'edus, in the testimony. Nezer zuklila edus. So the crown serves as testimony. The Gemara says, what's that talking about? I'm Rav Yehuda. I'm Rav Edus, hila beis avi shekol arai lamachus. Homaso. Apparently, it's this form-fitting crown that we already described by David. David put it on his head and it fit. And they put it on the head of Yoash and it fit, proving Edus that he was actually a descendant of the Meluch, of David HaMelech. V'chol she'en aroi lamachos, ein homaso. V'adoniah ben chagis mesnaseh le'mo ani amloch. So, Adoniah, he wanted to be the king. He wanted to be the melech. I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. For a third time now, says Rav Yehuda Marav, Shemisnaseh lohomo v'lo homaso. Try the crown, but it did not fit. Okay? Yeah, I agree with you. Right? It's a very good point. In other words, this was not a crown that they designed. It was a crown that they got from the Plishtim, and it is very strange. And then finally, Okay, that's pretty much it. Just one epilogue to all this. Vayasla rechavu prashim v'chamishim ish ratzim lefanav. Adoniyahu, when he ran his rebellion against David, so he had rechavu prashim and he had 50 men running in front. My Rabbu say, the Gemara says, how were these people so fast? These 50 people. So Tana kulam netulei tchol v'chakuke kapos haraglaim hayu. Right, much like the blood dopers in cycling, for those of you who follow. So they had their spleens removed, and they also had the soles of their feet kind of shaved off. And that's what Rashi says. Not to habaster mina etzem, v'lo hayumargishim bekotzim ubebarkanim. And apparently it desensitized the bottoms of their feet so they can run over pretty much any object and not feel the pain of running over the objects. Okay. And that's kind of like, and that was only brought in because we spoke about Adoniyahu wearing the crown. So the Gemara then just took the opportunity to talk about the 50 people. Okay. Next part of today's daf. Okay. Shal Proklos ben Philosophos Ezra Mengalio. Who is this guy? I don't know much about him. Rashi does not provide much information as well. Minovi kochavim haya. Rashi says he was a heretic. He was not Jewish, says Rashi. Okay. I'm sure academics know a lot more than what I just gave you. But he asked Rabbi Gamliel the following question. And they were in the town of Akko. Shayaroches bemechas shel Aphrodite. So they were in a bathhouse. Rabbi Gamliel was. Apparently Proclus was with him as well. And it was a bathhouse of Aphrodite, meaning to say that there was a statue of Aphrodite standing in the courtyard of the bathhouse. And Proclus says to Rabbi Gamliel, how could you do that? How could you bathe in the bathhouse where there's an idol right in front of the bathhouse? And obviously, Proclus himself did not care, probably was happy about it, but was pointing to the hypocrisy of Rabbi Gamliel. And not only that, but he knows Pesukim and Chumash. Amar Lei Kasev B'Toras Chem Lo Yidbak B'Yadcha Me'uma Min HaChayrem Mimnei Ma Tarochetz B'Merech Shal Aphrodite. So you know that your Torah says that you can't get Hana, and meanwhile you're getting Hana. So Amar Lo, so Rabbi Gamliel now is response, we're waiting. So Amar Lo Ein Mishivin B'Merechatz. I can't answer you, we're in the bathhouse. Right, and you're not allowed to speak Torah in the bathhouse. You're not allowed to actually think about Torah in the bathhouse, which then, of course, spurred the legend that the Gra did math while in the bathhouse. But you're not and he may have, by the way. I'm not saying it's it's wrong. I'm just simply saying that that's where these things come from. So ukishiyatsa armalo anilo bati bigvula hi ba'a bigvulai. Ein omrim nasa merchatz noila Aphrodite, ela omer nasa Aphrodite noila merchatz. So number one, Rabbi Gamliel says to Proclus, look, I'm not on her territory, speaking about the idol, she's on our territory, which seems to mean the bathhouse was here before Aphrodite. Aphrodite came as an afterthought, and I didn't put it up, obviously. Somebody else did. But the first thing that was there was the bathhouse. She came later. Okay, that's argument number one. Dava acher. And another point to consider, im nosten lo lecha mamon harbe, I atam nichnas avodz kacham shocha arom uvalkeri umashin befaneha. And let me ask you this question. Is this normally how you treat your gods? Do you, with your gods, go in naked, balkeri, urinate, ze omeres al piyabe v'chola am mashin lefaneh? In fact, water runs out of the bathhouse, and it's sewage water. And you know what people do? They urinate right into that sewage water. All in the courtyard of this bathhouse. Lo namar ella Elohehem. Now, when is it a god? When you treat it like a god. Et she no igba mishum aloha, asur. Et she no igba mishum aloha, mutar. And if you treat it like a god, then there's something to talk about. But you're not treating this like a god. You are urinating naked in front of it. It's just, no. This isn't the god. All right. So there are two responses that Rabbi Gamliel is giving to Proclus when Proclus challenges him on his behavior. So number one, Bathos was here before Aphrodite. Okay, so this is really a Bathos. This is not a Makom Avodah Zarah. And two, I don't see people conducting themselves appropriately if you really believe that that little statue over there is a god. People don't urinate in front of their god. The Echi Avid Hachi. Now, the first thing the Gemara takes up is a halachic issue, which is, and now this is interesting because when I first read the Mishnah, I didn't have a problem with this at all. In other words, I thought what Rabbi Gamliel did was totally appropriate. In other words, the answers that he was giving was the response, was a halachic response. Now, you can't do that in the bathroom. You can't have halachic discussions in the bathroom, even if you're not using, even if you're not quoting Pesukim in the Torah. You just can't speak halacha in the bathroom. Fine. The Pasuk says, lo yiralecha ervas davar, that you while in a makom kadosh, while discussing holy things, you can't have ervas davar, you can't be exposed, you can't be naked, that's fine. So what he answered is, I can't answer you. Now that's funny, because I thought, perfect, that's like totally appropriate. And what bothers the Gemara, and when I prepared the Gemara, I learned, meaning I didn't know this, that even that's inappropriate. Even saying in the bathroom, I can't discuss this matter, right? I can't answer you right now. Even that you can't say in the bathroom. And I was taking, right, personally I'm talking about it. I didn't know that. And the Gemara says you can't do that. Because by him expressing the idea, oh, I can't talk about it, it means he's thinking about why it is this is not a makom avodah zarah, and even that can't be done in the bathroom. Which again, now you understand why the Gra had to do math. He really had to get his mind off of Torah. which should be all of our problems. But the now, the chi tema balashon chol amarle, and the Gemara says, and maybe you'll tell me that the answer that he was giving, it was not in Hebrew. Maybe he was speaking in the lingua franca at the time, which I don't know, what was it? Meaning, if it wasn't Hebrew, what were they speaking to each other? What was Lashon Chol? Maybe Aramaic? Maybe? The Amar Abai, Dvarim Shechol, Mutal Amram B'Lashon Kodesh, Dvarim Shekodesh Asal Amram B'Lashon Chol. And the Gemara's answer is no, Torah is Torah. It doesn't matter what language you're speaking. So in other words, if we're speaking in English, that doesn't make it okay. Right? If we're talking in the bathroom and we're talking in Torah, even if we're not talking B'Lashon Kodesh, it's still Torah, you can't do it. So the language does not change the halacha. You can't speak like this in the Torah.
He shouldn't have just answered him at all.
He should have not answered him at all. Tana, so the Gemara says, fine. We learned on a brisa, kishiyatza amalo ein meshiva memerchas. And the Gemara's answer is, exactly. He didn't answer him in the bathroom. Meaning, when Proclus challenged him in the bathroom, he did not respond, period. Then when he came out of the bathroom, the first thing he said to him is, Eimeshivim b'merchas. I can't give you an answer. We were in the bathroom, we were in the bathhouse at the time. People were unclothed, I was unclothed. I could not have given you an answer. Now that we're outside, I'll give you an answer. But before I do that, I'll explain to you why I didn't answer you in the bathhouse. Okay. Amar Chama bar Yosef Brebi. Amar of Oshia. Tshuva genuva heshiva Rabbi Gamliel la'oso hegmon. Alright, now, from here until the end of today's daf, what kind of answer did he give? What was that answer? The answer was really a compound of a number of different ideas. Number one, he said, we were here first. Right? The bathhouse was here before Aphrodite. That's number one. And number two, he said to him, look, people are urinating. That it can't be a god because people are urinating. So, Rabbi Chama quotes Rabbi Oshia, and Rabbi Oshia says, "Tshuva genuva heishiva Rabbi Gamliel." It's a stolen answer. It's a stolen response. Now Rashi says it's very strong. Klomer dachaku bekash. The way Rashi explains it, it's like he threw straw at him. Meaning it's nonsense what Rabbi Gamliel said to Proclus. Toso says, no, that's not what tshuva genuva means. Ein lefaresh. Kain ledivrei Abaye leRabba Bar Ula shomrim shafilo haya kedivrei Gamliel alo ya asalachenir lafarsh kenuva klamar aluva umechusami menu v'tignov et levavi umetargaminan v'kisis minai. It was a, Tosa says it was a deceptive answer. It was a concealed answer, meaning that there is something to what Rabbi Gamliel said, but it was somewhat deceptive. Okay, you'll see as we go through the explanations of why it was, you'll see Tosa seems to be more in line with what Genuva means over here. There is something to what Rabbi Gamliel says, but it's somewhat deceptive. Okay. So, what the Ani Omer, sorry, let me just finish this sentence. The Ani Omer, Eino Genuva. Okay. And this is Rabbi Chama talking, Rabbi Chama Bar Yosef, I don't agree. I think the answer that Rabbi Gamliel gave to Proclos was in fact a legitimate, correct response. Okay, and now, why did Rabbi Hoshea think that this was a deceptive answer? And why did Rabbi Chama say no? I think the answer was absolutely correct. So the Gemara is going to give four possible explanations. My genuvte, the Kamar lo, so it was Genuva because what did he say to him? They urinate in front of Aphrodite. And so what? We have a god, it's called Baal Peor. Baal Peor, what do? They drop their pants and they defecate in front of Baal Peor, and Zuhi Avodasah, and that's the way it's worshipped. And so over here, can't you say that that's the way they worship Aphrodite, by urinating in front? And that's why Rabbi Oshia says, Tshuva Genuva. And now what's Rabbi Chama's response? Ve'ani Omer, Eino Genuva. Zu Avodasa Bekach, V'zu Eino Avodasa Bekach. So simple. Look, when it comes to Baal Peor, that's the way to worship Baal Peor, by defecating. By Aphrodite, now I'm no Aphrodite expert. I'm not even a beginner in Aphrodite. But in Aphrodite, urinating is not the way to worship it. So it could very well be that Rabbi Gamliel is absolutely right. That they urinate in front of Aphrodite, and that is that's a dishonoring of Aphrodite. That's pshat number one. Pshat number two, Amar Abaye. Genufta mehacha dekamar le'ani lo bati bigvula v'hi ba bigvuli. We were here first. Right? The bathhouse was here first. If you have an avodah zarah that has a merchatz attached to it, if you can go into the bathhouse without having to show any type of tova, any type of favor, either money or, I'm so happy that you allowed me in your bathhouse with this little idol next to it, if you have to show any type of favor, any type of gratitude, so then, no, you can't do it. But if you can go in there without having to show any type of gratitude, then that would be fine. And it doesn't seem to matter what was there first. The bathhouse was there first, the Aphrodite it doesn't seem to matter. The Ani Omer, so in that regard, so again, that's the Tshuva Genuva. Because in that regard, what do you mean? We were here first. It doesn't matter. What's the difference? The Ani Omer Eini Genuva Shelo B'Tovas Rabbi Gamliel K'Tovas Achem Dami. So the Gemara says, no, it is not a wrong answer. In fact, Rabbi Gamliel gave a right answer. Rabbi Gamliel was the leader of his generation. He was so prominent. He walked into a bathhouse. By definition is Tova. Right? Your store is visited by some celebrity. Right, you're not going to take a picture of that celebrity, paste it up on the front of the store. Here's who came here. So if Rabbi Gamliel goes in, by definition, it's Tova. That's gratitude showed by Rabbi Gamliel when going in. So the truth of the matter is that, yes, it would be a problem for Rabbi Gamliel if he just walks in, even if he didn't say anything. Number three, Rabbi Shimon Bar Chiya Amar Gnufta Mehacha Dekamar Lo Zu Omer Es Al Aviv V'Chol Adam Mashtinim B'Faneh V'Chi Mashtininim B'Faneh Mai Havi V'Atanan Rak B'Faneh Yishtim B'Faneh Girara V'Zarek Ba Es Atzoa Harei Ze Eino B'Tela V'Ani Omer. Sorry, pause. Right? Well, again, this is coming up in the nuns. How does a non-Jew repudiate his Avodah Zarah? Okay? So, when we get to the nuns, we'll discuss it. But the Mishnah tells us later on that spitting at the Avodah Zarah, urinating at the Avodah Zarah, or even throwing a piece of excrement on it, ain't a betela. That doesn't repudiate the Avodah Zarah. So when Rami Gamliel over here says, look at what everyone's doing. They're all urinating in front of the Aphrodites. So what? The Mishnah later on says that urinating is not a repudiation of the Avodah Zarah. So what? So they're all urinating. V'ani Omer, and again Rabbi Chama is coming to defend the answer of Rabbi Gamliel, ain't a genuva. Hasam lefi shaita hu rasa chalav ahad mefayisla. Look, one act of urination, one act of throwing excrement, one act of spitting, he's just angry right now with his Avodah Zarah. But don't worry, they'll make up. He's right now, just something bad happened to him, and currently he's mad at his God, right? And he curses his God. He even throws some dung at his God. but they'll be fine. They'll make up, right? He loves his God. He's just having, you know, it's just a fight.
Isn't that like an act of nullification?
Right. Well, that's what the Gemara is wondering. The Gemara is saying that it should be, but the Mishnah later on Anun Beis will teach us that if he just does it one time, that's not an act of nullification because that it's not enough. It's not enough repudiation. But hacha kol shaita v'shaita b'zil zola kaima. But over here, people are doing it all the time. This is clearly more than just I'm having a fight with my God. This is clearly I don't believe it's a God anymore if all they're doing is just urinating in front of their God. Answer number four, and with this obviously we'll finish. Rabba Barula Amar, Genufta Mehacha de Kamalei, Ein Omrim Nasa Merchatz Noel Aphrodite, Ela Nasa Aphrodite Noel Merchatz. Right? The bathhouse is not there to accessorize Aphrodite's, but it's just the opposite. V'chi Amar Nasa Merchatz Aphrodite Noel Mai Havi, V'atanya Omer Bait Zel Avodos Kochavim, Ko Zel Avodos Kochavim, Lo Amar Klum She'ein Hektish Lavodos Kochavim. The Mishnah later on will tell us that there's no such thing as hektish to Avodah Zarah. Meaning, in our construct of the holy, in the Beis HaMikdash, we have an idea of hektish. I could dedicate something to the Beis HaMikdash, and it will have status. In the world of Avodah Zarah, lahavdil alef alfei havdalos, there's no idea of hektish. I can't say, this is dedicated to Avodah Zarah. That doesn't mean anything. Either it is Avodah Zarah, or it's not. There's something called Takrovis Avodah Zarah. You can offer something to Avodah Zarah, but there's no such thing as Hekdesh for Avodah Zarah. So what? So the bathhouse is there to accessorize the Avodah Zarah. It doesn't give it any status. And that's why Rabbi Oshia says, Shuva Genuva. It's not an answer. The Ani Omer, and for a fourth time, now the Gemara is going to explain what's Rabbi Chama's response. Ein a genuva nihi de itzra lo mitzra noi miyaika. Look, it doesn't become iser. You're right. It doesn't become a part and parcel of the Avodah Zarah. There is no concept of hektesh, but you still have a concept of noi. So they're beautifying the Avodah Zarah, and. And since it's there to beautify, if in fact it was accessorizing the Avodah Zarah, so then you're absolutely right. You cannot benefit from something which is an accessory to an Avodah Zarah. Something that's there to beautify the Avodah Zarah. You're right. It doesn't gain status, but you still can't benefit from it. Okay? So four possible explanations of why Rabbi Oshia believed the answer that Rami Gamliel gave was a genuva. Again, according to Rashi, it was worthless. According to Tosfos, it was not worthless, but it was a concealed answer. And four times Rabbi Chama saying, no, it's not Shuva Genuva, there's something substantial to that answer. And the Gemara goes through four possibilities of what that meant. Okay, stop over here.